Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with our subject on matter. We are so grateful and happy you can join us today. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And thank you all for joining us. We will start with our morning prayer.
This morning I have excerpts from Unity of Good, page 31, and page 204 of the Blue Book, Divinity Course in General Collectanea. God is a spirit, or more accurately translated, God is spirit, declares the scripture, John 4:24. And they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. If God is spirit and God is all, surely there can be no matter, for the divine all must be spirit. Do not look to matter to tell you your success, but look up, for your harvest is right at hand. You know the Father's love, trust it. Then when you hear a whisper, now you are a sinner and so is your punishment, the suffering is the consequence, put it out, put it out. Oh, may you feel the touch of the spiritual idea that is the light in your path. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you very much. And our watching point.
Watch number 232. Watch lest you feel rebellious instead of grateful when God gives you a call to prove your understanding in demonstration. When you have a problem and you feel that you are being unjustly treated, it shows that you do not perceive the wholesome purpose back of material discomfort. Fishermen find it difficult to skin eels because the smooth surface gives them nothing to grab hold of. This belief of matter must be stripped off, and human harmony offers nothing to lay hold of for this purpose. Discord furnishes us with a handle that we may hold to that makes the stripping process more efficacious. An alert metaphysician never tries to get rid of sickness as such. He uses it as a handle by means of which to strip away his belief in the reality of matter. Then he fulfills Science and Health, page 574, which reads, note this, that the very message or swift-winged thought which poured forth hatred and torment brought also the experience, which at last lifted the seer to behold the great city, the four equal sides of which were heaven bestowed and heaven bestowing. Think of this, dear reader, for it will lift the sackcloth from your eyes, and you will behold the soft-winged dove descending upon you. The very circumstance which your suffering sense seems wrathful and afflictive, love can make an angel entertained unawares.
Very beautiful. Thank you. Comments on that?
Well, we've talked many times about when we have a situation, whatever it's called, and it's uncomfortable, and we just have to insist that it's going to bless us. And that's what it says here, the wholesome purpose, a useful, it has serving a useful purpose, and that's to lift us out of the belief that we were born into matter, where the crux of all the problems come from is we were born into this human experience and now we have to suffer from it. And so grateful that Christian Science is here to, and Christ Jesus proved that we're not material, we're spiritual.
Thank you. Anyone else?
You're not coming through clearly, Elizabeth.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
No. Oh, you're healed.
Are you there?
Yeah, we can hear you.
I'm going to try.
Oops, now we've lost you entirely.
I thought it was really interesting the part about the human harmony.
Yep.
Offers nothing to lay hold of. So it does make you appreciate your challenges, because otherwise you would go along off to that edge of the waterfall and you don't know it.
Right.
Well, human harmony never stirs anyone into action.
Right.
Whereas if you got something to prove, all of a sudden the action kicks in. And you can do. And I know from my experience, it's been the troublesome times that caused me to gain the most growth in grace. But this watching point also started out with complaining and rejoicing. And the rejoicing was the answer and not the complaining. So that was very helpful. That actually goes along with Edward Kimball's article we have on our website. Edward appears to disappear. And he says, the thing that you need to do is to start rejoicing and not so much complaining. And that's the thing that works out the resolution.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was Israelites all the time that was a problem.
They just were,
for what God was giving them, it would have made a big difference.
Yes.
This makes me think.
I just wanted to say, and I came in where Bruce was talking about tribulation and rejoicing, and I wanted to say also that you get to the point where when you're in some sort of seeming tribulation, that you're grateful for it, because you're like, wow, I'm going to end up learning something here, and it's going to be wonderful. And no matter how long that something seems to have been going on for you, it just means that there is a lesson in it, and you can hear it and learn it and be it and do it. And so it's just so gratifying. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Lawrence?
Yeah, I think it makes me think of when you're really reading and imbibing the truth, and you feel like you're really getting something, and then boom, something happens. I think this is the time where we should rather, well, like you said, not rebel, but be grateful, because as we know, error only comes because the truth is there. Error comes to tell a lie about the truth. So I think it's rather should be an awakening for us all to be grateful, more grateful to God, like you are knowing more about this, and use that time to really know the nothingness of the error instead of the complaining about it. Because sometimes somebody will say, oh, I gave a testimony, and then the next morning something happens. And I think it's more, you use the truth that you've known, you've gained then, and know that, no, this is just a lie about what I'm knowing now, and I'm not letting it know. It says, Mrs. Eddy says, put it out. No, it's nothingness.
No, that's right. And it's important that we remember that we're, this is Earth's preparatory school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're here to learn and grow. And it shouldn't be surprising that after we study really well and learn things, from our study, that we will be asked to prove them. You go to school, you study, And then you take an exam to see if you really know it. Mm-hmm. Well, we have exams every day here, don't we, to see if we really know our science.
Early on being here, I noticed that there would be periods that it felt a little smooth and then periods that it were harder. And I started thinking of it like a stair step. The flat parts that are, you know, parallel with the floors, that they're for you to step on, but it's the upward part that actually gets you to the next floor.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And if we rejoice in the spiritual good that we are learning and gaining and experiencing, we won't be able to complain so much about the material, so-called material problems that keep mm-hmm. hampering us. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, if you spend a lot of time complaining, well, you're spending a lot of time making a reality of the material appearance mm-hmm. rather than rejoicing over the spiritual reality, the spiritual good. And it's an indication of, you know, kind of where we are, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you prolong your problems when you complain. So yes,
sometimes you can be angry with God. You know, why are you making me suffer like this? Well, you know, instead of, you know, awakening to what He has already done, it has no error or imperfection in there. So,
get angry with God. Mm-hmm. First thing you can do.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is when error in belief says has an I gotcha moment, mm-hmm. and that's what people do. You know, I've heard people, all this stuff happened to me. I don't believe in God because of this, and this, and the next thing. So they're adrift.
But really, it just shows they don't have a clue as to who and what God is. Or who they are. I mean, you know, Jesus would often go into the wilderness for days at a time, right? Mm-hmm. And what happened each time that he came down off of the mountain?
He could heal more.
He was confronted with a whole bunch of people who needed help. Mm-hmm. And he healed them, yes. He didn't complain about them.
Yeah, he didn't think, I wanted to keep my peace.
Right. Right.
That's not the kind of peace you want to keep anyway. I remember long ago, Mr. Evans taught us, the answer always is to love more. So we'll have disturbing experiences come into our life. No one's exempt from that. But the answer is always to love more. And in this case, it's first to love God and to love the lesson that we're learning from the experience.
Yeah, and instead of asking, you know, why is this happening to me, God, you should ask, what lesson can I learn from this? How can I grow higher from it? And you will. I've been reading Spiritual Footsteps, Mary Baker Eddy's Spiritual Footsteps, and the chapter that I'm in right now correlates to this watching point. It's chapter 9, which I'm going to share some of it with you because it's very valuable. And I've been praying about ways in which to incorporate how Mrs. Eddy used this science in her daily life so that, again, we use it in our daily life as she did. And it starts out, Ms. Carpenter is saying, one of the outstanding memories I have of our leader was her insistence on demonstration. And he goes on to say how even, you know, when she wanted advice from God, if you will, or something, you know, when she needed an answer to something, she would turn to science and health, which she says she never read through consecutively until, I guess it was until June 1907. So she would just open up to a page and it would tell her what she needed to know. And she said she was like a craftsman who would be turning to his tools, and it would always be there. The answers would be there. Now I've talked about how reading through Signs and Health, the Bible, and consecutively is a good thing to do. And I'm sure it is a good thing to do in many instances, but it's also a good thing to do to be spontaneous and to turn spontaneously to various things. And we know that Mrs. Eddy did this in the morning, sometimes with her students, right? They would come in and she would open up the Bible. It said she would apparently open at random and then expound to the students on whatever verse caught her eye when she opened the book. The morning lessons were most remarkable and inspiring and served to impress us with the wonderful guidance shown in her being led to the various portions of Scripture that just fitted into the need of the moment. After I left Pleasant View in 1906, my wife and I were invited to return for a visit. On the morning of April 27th, 1906, Mrs. Eddy gave us the following Bible lesson. She opened at random to Luke 9:56. For the Son of Man is not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. And on the train home, Mrs. Carpenter wrote down this unfoldment, and she recalled it as follows. What is the Son of Man? So this is what Mrs. Eddy said to them. He is the idea of God, the consciousness of truth. If you had children, you would make them obey. You would find some way to make them mind. And if you couldn't do it in any other way, you would punish them. If you wanted to get a man out of a house, would you make him comfortable in it? No, you would make him uncomfortable. You would pull down the chimneys and take out the windows. Now we have got to get out of this house, mortal habitation. What holds us in it? Pleasure or pain? The pleasures of sense hold us, not the pains of sense. I've got to get this old woman, and you, Mrs. Carpenter, you've got to get out. You've got to get out this young woman. Is it this mortal existence real? No. Is there any mortal man? No. It is the only Adam dream. Is it real then? No. Then is there any pain? No. Then we are out of it now. Is there any creation apart from God? No. Is man a creator? No. Then he is the then is he the father of children? No. Can he be the father of a lie? No. Has a lie a father? No. Then is there any lie? And then he goes on and says, I'd like to conclude the Bible lesson given by Mrs. Eddy on September 24th, 1903, for it reiterates the same central point. So this is what Mr. Carpenter writes. And this is a lesson that Mrs. Eddy gave them. When you are on the housetop, don't go down to take anything out of the house. I am a great way out of the house, body, and it will not do for me to go down into the house. Argument. I gain more by holding to God. If you are in the house, you will have to heal others, argue, and so get out of the house. One who has suffered sickness or discord, I have always found more tractable in science than one who has always been well. Do we have to be sick to work out? Not if you can get out without it. Health in matter must be given up for health in God. If one is a tenant and is satisfied, he will remain there. The owner may want him out of the tenement, and so takes out the windows, the boards, up the doors, and makes it so uncomfortable for him, he finally gets out. God is the owner. If one is comfortable in the material tenement, he must be made uncomfortable in order to get out. But if he gets out without being made uncomfortable, sick, etc., all right. But I've never seen one who did. The Bible continually speaks of tribulation. If you are well, heal the sick and get out of the material tenement matter and learn health in God. Do not court sickness, but get out of material belief. And then, I have come so far through tribulation. So she certainly makes the point for that watching point. And so we've all learned this lesson. And a good lesson it is. And that's why we just keep moving along and not complaining about whatever trials come our way. And we do know she learned everything through tribulation, right? Just because she was in science, discovered it, and all that didn't mean she had a carefree life. It doesn't work that way. It's interesting. She said she never knew of anyone who didn't get out of the house without the tribulation. So, okay. Well, that was a lot on that one watching point. All right. Now the golden text, Jeremy.
1 Corinthians. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the spirit which is of God, that we might know the things that are freely given to us of God.
Okay. And Nancy, would you like to share what you found?
Yes. Excuse me. Yes. I looked up received in Webster's 1828, and it's accepted, admitted, embraced, entertained, or believed. And from Gill Exposition, now we have received not the spirit of the world, the sinful carnal disposition of the men of the world, which is a spirit of covetousness, uncleanness, pride, malice, and error, or rather the carnal wisdom of the world, which is common to worldly men. It lies in the knowledge of worldly things and is pursued and exercised for worldly advantages. But the spirit which is of God, the Holy Ghost, which proceeds from the Father and the Son, is the gift of God to his people, and whom they receive into their hearts as a spirit of illumination, faith, comfort, and truth, that we might know the things that are freely given to us of God, who has given himself, his Son, and all things freely along with him, and all which were provided for them in the covenant of peace, and made up that grace given unto them freely in Christ before the world began. We always had it.
Yeah.
It's been with us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Any comments on that or the watching point? God pours out his goodness to us all day, all the time. We don't have to be taken off by the things of the world. We try to lock us into materiality. Gary read something interesting this week in Bicknell Young.
Yeah, it was in Protective Work, I think is the name of the article. He wrote that. Never be afraid of your fear. And then he goes on to say, because it's only mesmerism. And, you know, it's worth thinking about, because we all have times where we're fearful, you know, of one thing or another. And isn't that the result of believing that somehow there's life or truth or intelligence or substance in matter, that somehow there's something material that we need that we don't have, and we're fearful of being without it, or, you know, who knows what would be the cause?
Well, that there's some other power apart from God.
Exactly. But that's the bugaboo about matter. Mrs. Eddy did say that this is one of the one of the concepts that is least understood among Christian Scientists, and might be the last one to be understood. But a materially minded person is bound to be fearful, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're counting something from matter, well, you're you should be afraid.
What were you saying, Florence?
No, I think for me, I realized that, the times that I was so afraid is because I was believing to be so separate from God. And we're never separate from Him. It's really interesting to awaken to the fact that, no, I'm always with Him. My hand is in His hand. This is how I used to pray to get over how fearful I was. But, to finally get the confidence that, no, I'm always with Him, that is so helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Get rid of the fear.
Thank you.
One of the things as I'm reading the biography of Mrs. Eddy, one of the things that concerned her the most, especially when Christian Science was getting more and more popular, this is what concerned her was everybody's comfort in matter. They were getting wealthy. Christian Science was getting more popular. Churches were being built all over. And this concern, yes, the healing was going on, but she was concerned about the her followers were getting very comfortable in the human's condition. And I think it was mentioned. Yeah, I think Mary mentioned it either last week or the week before in the roundtable, but as she looked out from her, and she didn't see any Christian Scientists in the congregation. And this was one of her biggest concerns was, if she could see this was, anyway, it's interesting how it's brought up many times in the biography is her concern about this.
That's why this reading of the biographies and even have the privilege of what I just read, what Mrs. Eddy gave her students from the Bible, that same teaching that she gave them, we are privy to through these wonderful books by these wonderful early workers who wrote it down. We must think about it and take advantage of it. And yes, because this was the big danger. And I know even in Sunday school or somewhere, I wasn't that old in the science, you heard that Christian Scientists were known to be extremely wealthy. It was also called the armchair religion, where you'd sit and think and read and think about it. But it was losing the healing power. We're going to talk more about all this in just a few minutes. So thank you. But Gary's point too, a materialist is going to be fearful. And Bignell Young brings out the point that truth is all. So go ahead, blow your hardest, Era. You can, say, that you have things to be afraid of or whatever, but you don't, because truth wins the day, right? Truth wins the day, always. It can't help. That's all there is truth. So it's good to put fear in its place. And yes, we don't have to be afraid. We are inseparable from the Father, and He loves us. So, Craig wants to say something.
What would be good for Christian Science is to measure themselves by saying, "Have I done enough good today?" Or God is, and if they're continually blessing and doing good and healing people, then they say, like Mrs. Eddy says, that I'm satisfied. And Paul, it basically feels like he's saying that in the Golden Text, where he's complimenting the apostles for their good works. If they're in that spirit of God, they definitely have earned it.
And the point that was made before is so important. It comes in my prayers a lot about how students of Christian Science, we need to be so careful about success, because if one thing is true is that Christian Science brings success in so many ways and fields, and yes, about wealthy and of course healthy, and that is a fact that we all have experiences, me for so many decades. And then we have to be so aware about the mesmerism or going for either that success or that wealth and forgetting that faith without deeds is dead. So I have experience and do believe that divine mind is always calling us for the deeds. And this is all the point that was made so wonderful. Remind me again. We don't get comfortable and enjoy the blessings instead of sharing them. And it is something so important. I also wanted to share about something that was said before, but I didn't have a chance then. That beautiful hymn that said, wait and love more for every hate, and fear no evil, for God is good and love is gain. And it was perfect for something that was said before, but it's still absolute truth. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, the responsive reading, is, I think it was my favorite part of the lesson. I love all this instruction from Proverbs, beautiful instruction. And the first, the preparations of the heart in man and the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. And in looking that up in a commentary, it says, man's heart must be divinely prepared to fall in with God's plans, or he will resist, reject, and choose any plan of his own before God's. The heart will never yield to be saved by grace through faith until God makes it willing in the day of his power. So you have to be prepared, don't you? You have to be prepared in order to receive God's blessings and to follow what he would have you do. And if you're not, you will fight with it. You won't want it. But I love that. And also the answer in the tongue. God gives you what to say and when to say it and how to say it. All those things as you're demonstrating his oneness. Now, along with this, I got into something which sort of goes along with a lot of different things in the Christian Science movement. Several years ago, I was given books about Augusta Stetson. I've mentioned her before. We've talked about her. Many of you know who she is. She was an early worker, one that Mrs. Eddy, many examples of her thinking very highly of Augusta Stetson, writing very beautiful letters to her. And Augusta Stetson, she was asked to form the First Church of Christ Scientists in New York City, which she did. And I offer this with absolutely no judgment. I have no judgment on Augusta Stetson. There's been many things written about her, pro and con. And I just know what happened to our church. Augusta Stetson was eventually excommunicated. Our church was as well. But anyway, she started this church. So what happened with the church?
It became incredibly prosperous.
I think it became too prosperous or something. There were wealthy people and all of that. I don't remember exactly, but I've read about that. It became too materialistic because of the wealth.
And it got to the point that he wanted her own branch churches, right?
There's various things that are said about it. It was a huge is the second biggest church I know of to the Mother Church. And it was full of, you know, she just had all kinds of
had offices, and it had all kinds of facilities for practitioners to have offices in the church. I mean, it was huge, huge church, something you would actually expect from New York City, you know, in a way. And there was a lot of envy and jealousy about the church, you know, within the church and outside of the church. And this, you know, Augusta Stetson lived a New York lifestyle. She attracted a lot of people. She healed a lot of people. She taught a lot of practitioners. And she became quite insistent on her teaching. She had a very strong, you know, sense of the science, and you know, and she lived a New York lifestyle, and not everybody was comfortable with that. And it that she ended up becoming, you know, getting excommunicated. And when Mrs. Eddy was asked about it, she didn't enter into the decision. She kept herself apart from the decision. And I think the only comment I've ever heard read was that, you know, that might have been attributed to Mrs. Eddy is that, you know, people, something to the effect that people, you know, graduate out of the church at some point in their lives. Some people do, anyway.
That is something, I think it's in this book somewhere, where she did tell Mrs. Augusta Stetson that eventually everyone will graduate out of the organization. But it was quite a big to-do in the newspapers, everywhere, everything. But it is, to Karen's point, an example truly of the materiality. And Augusta Stetson, she had a beautiful home right next to the church, you know, with all fine art. And I honestly, I don't know how wise that was. And all these very wealthy patients that just seemed to adore her. And it ended up in her getting excommunicated. But the beginning of this is interesting, because when Mrs. Eddy asked her to start a church in New York City, this is what is in the book. It says, in 1886, Mrs. Eddy asked Augusta to go to New York City to help establish the Christianity of Christian Science. She added, there will be plenty of people who will attempt to work in Christian Science, but will only pervert it. And the result will be mental relief on a material basis and faith cure. I want the Christianity of Christian Science established. I just found that so interesting to think about what that meant, the Christianity of it.
It says Jesus lived the Christianity.
He did.
Mrs. Eddy says.
Yes. So
she wanted that reaching out and helping and,
yes,
and having it reproduced, multiplied by your members.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I'm sharing this today because this is counsel for us today, and warnings. So in building this church, and I mean, they spared no expense. Okay. I mean, marble and gold and, then it said the question of the inscription to be engraved prominently on the Concord granite of the 96th Street or south wall of the church proved to be a waymark experience as the new edifice was rising. One of the trustees suggested that the phrase, "to the glory of God," be inscribed on the church wall. Augusta felt otherwise. Accordingly, at her suggestion, the Board of Trustees sent to Mrs. Eddy two cardboard tablets with two proposed inscriptions. One, "to the glory of God," and the other, "a tribute of love to our leader and teacher, Mary Baker Eddy." Augusta had already obtained Mrs. Eddy's permission to inscribe her leader's name on their new church edifice. So Mrs. Eddy's approval of the second proposed inscription was readily accepted by all. Mrs. Eddy's response to the trustees' proposal was accompanied by prophetic words. So this is a letter she wrote. Pleasant View, Concord, New Hampshire, October 22, 1903. First Church of Christ Scientists, New York City. My beloved brethren, what if your church edifice in the far future be desecrated and used by others? Then your inscription, "to the glory of God," would be a stumbling block. I advise you not to engrave that assertion on stone, but write it in your hearts and demonstrate it in your glorious lives. Let it be at present a silent desire, and God will reward that prayer. A declaration after a preparation of the heart is a hindrance of advancement. A declaration before a preparation of the heart is a hindrance of advancement. The scriptures say, "The preparation of the heart and the answer of the tongue is from the Lord." Believe me, dear ones, that I am writing this from a heart overflowing with love for you and with an earnest prayer for your prosperity. As ever, yours lovingly, Mary B. G. Eddy. You know what happened to that church?
Came apartments, right?
It's, yeah, in the late 1990s, first another church took it over. Then it was supposed to become condominiums, but that didn't work out. So now my understanding is a children's museum. Mrs. Eddy, at that time, she foresaw what was going to happen. I found that so astounding the first time I read this. And then, what an example of the preparations of the heart. But Mrs. Eddy, you know, that's why I love that chapter on spiritualism. She knew past, present, and future. She knew that, I'm sure she knew that was going to happen, but she didn't stop it. She let it have its day. And so now, yeah, now it's no longer a church.
No longer a church.
And what she said held true, as she always knew. But here we are, carrying this on. And then this too I found very interesting. This is written by someone. I wanted to correct something that I said during the roundtable. I mentioned a newspaper article from 1903, but it wasn't 1903. It was 1913, after Mrs. Eddy passed, 3 years after she passed, December 21st, 1913. A newspaper article by Lillian Gale Armstrong. Now, she was in defense of Mrs. Stetson, and there was all of these things out in the newspapers. All kinds of things were written in the newspapers. But this is, I guess it was in the New York Times. This woman wrote for the LA Times. She's quoting someone from the New York Times. And it was someone who was not really She writes, I'm not a member of any church organization, though I've been a student of Christian Science for 10 years. I speak with authority as I am entirely conversant with this controversy, meaning the Stetson controversy, for which time has been most detrimental to the advancement of Christian Science. Mm-hmm. And she writes, those of us who view Christian Science from the outside, and therefore with impartiality as regards to its factions, can plainly see that its present managers are of heterodox beliefs and practices, that they have not kept the faith, but have made in an effort to conciliate the negligible antagonism of those who do not understand Mrs. Eddy's doctrines. They have made one weak concession after another to so-called reason. Till now, the system is hardly distinguishable from new thought or mental healing.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Now, this is in
1913.
That this is the case has been the growing conviction of all those who possess a clear understanding of Mrs. Eddy's teachings, for them not to apprehend would be impossible. So think about all this that's gone on and what we are left with and the importance of what we are doing. And to go back to the very beginning, I want the Christianity of Christian Science established. Was the Christianity of Christian Science established with all of this?
No. It may have been, but it was buried under the materialism of the, mm-hmm. you know, of the organization and the church building and whatever else.
I would look up prosperity because I think it gets confused always with money.
Yes.
But it also says that it's thriving or successful. And if it had been successful in Christianity, or, you know, that doesn't mean lots of materialism or maybe even lots of people, just
yes,
that it's proving where it's from. It's God.
Yes. So these are the pitfalls of the materialism. And I'm glad Karen brought that out because that's exactly what I wanted to talk about in today's subject, because this isn't pointing fingers at anyone. Mm-mm. It's pointing fingers. I'm pointing a finger at me. We all look within as to how we can do better. Not
be mesmerized.
Yeah, be mesmerized or just get so self-complacent.
Hence the importance of preparing the heart.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a discipline. Discipline and humility prepare the heart to be receptive to God's goodness.
Yes.
On page 359 of Miscellany, there's a section called A Letter from Mrs. Eddy, but it's about a letter that was written to Mrs. Stetson, where, a bunch of people had sent 24 of her students had sent quotes to her, and she shared it with Mrs. Eddy, and Mrs. Eddy said, "Awake and arise from this temptation produced by animal magnetism upon yourself, allowing your students to deify you and me. Mm-hmm. Treat yourself for it and help your students to rise out of it." So
thank you.
Absolutely.
So the danger.
It is a terrible danger. And all of this, we've talked about, you know, this people with, yeah, who their teacher is. And I was taught by Dr. Todd, or any of this. So-and-so, so wonderful. Even such a wonderful healer. God is the healer. Mm-hmm. God is the healer. And that when we get into that, it very quickly turns to, you know what. So we keep a very low and humble profile and this work, and just the study of it is so important. We're not building up of the churches. Thank God that's all over now. Think of how many have closed. since then. And it's not about that. Science and health, understand it yourself. Get where you can heal yourself. Demonstrate yourself. Demonstrate, which means to...
Let the truth show.
Yes. Evidence. Evidence of the truth. This is the truth. Keep this low profile. So, and the materiality is the big temptation always, because, you know, the human mind yearns to just be comfortable. Who doesn't? We all do. But,
I'm sorry, Mary.
That is a byproduct. You know, hopefully you're not, you know, hanging by your toes somewhere, but you're having a fairly reasonable life. Go ahead, Karen.
Well, I was just going to add that the more popular things, you know, there was such a clamor to see Mrs. Eddy, to meet with her. The more she retreated from society because of this. I mean, she could have just gone, but the more and more popular this, the more she retreated from society. And that was so not what other people normally would do. The more they got accolades and everything, you know, they left being a center of attention. But Mrs. Eddy did the exact opposite. And it wasn't understood by a lot of people. But that's why she just got more and more.
This is why. And this is what, you know, Jesus had the same problem, didn't he? People want to deify him. And it drove him, you know, he had to remind people over and over and over again that was God within him.
Correct.
Personal
adulation, a form of materiality.
It is. It's a form of materiality, looking to personality, and it is very detrimental. So
it looks like her motives to build this church were not pure. Instead of putting God first and letting this be the structure of truth and love and building it on spiritual foundation, looks like she was very proud and, oh, look what Mrs. Eddy wants me to do, and I will do this, and I'll make it the best. And it was an idol. So it can't last. It was not on a firm foundation.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, as I say, I make no judgment over this. I accept to say, you know.
Just learn from it.
Learn whatever lessons there are to learn from it. And she, well, anyway.
The error is not personal anyway.
No, it's not personal. It seeks you out any way it can. And like I said, Mrs. Eddy seemed to know all of this was going to happen.
She did.
And
even the rot that's going up in Boston. She talked about the rot in the church.
Oh, right, the rot, because the church center has been rotting.
Yeah.
So, again, we just take it to heart as to what we can do. What does that mean? The Christianity of Christian Science, to really think about what that means, how we can do that better. And I have to say one other thing in the responsive reading that I love. I thought, this is maybe my favorite statement in the lesson. Whosoever trusts in the Lord, happy is he. Okay? All these things about how to be happy.
Yes.
How are you happy? You trust in the Lord. Think about it. If you trust in the Lord, you're going to be happy.
Yes.
Again, what Gary was saying about the matter, you're materialistic. You're not going to be happy. You're going to be miserable. Doesn't matter how much you have, because you're going to be worried about losing it. It's all on a false basis. And Chardell, when we won't have time today, but you can look it up for yourself, found this Trusting God by Peter V. Ross, which I think is one of Mrs. Evan's favorite articles, because it was all about trusting the Father and how it does make you happy, and how the surf riders in the South Seas, they lean back on the unseen power and they glide over the waves as with as much assurance as people walk on city streets. Hmm. It's quite wonderful, their trust. So be trustful and you will be happy as well. And now we will end with Martha Wilcox.
Martha Wilcox writes in Scientific Translations, "Not a single blade of grass, a leaf, or a flower is material when viewed correctly. It is spirit, mind, which conceives, outlines, and forms these ideas, which multiply and replenish the earth." Mrs. Eddy says, in Science and Health, page 191, quote, "By its own volition, not a blade of grass springs up, nor a spray buds within the veil. Not a leaf unfolds its fair outlines, nor a flower starts from its cloistered cell," end quote. All natural beauty and grandeur, from the freshness of the morning to the calm of the evening and the starry heavens at night, are the presence of the one spirit and are therefore spiritual. All natural activities, such as eating and walking and resting and hearing and seeing and thinking and feeling, are not in nor of matter, but are the conscious functionings of the one spirit and are therefore spiritual. All natural love and affection and gladness and happiness and joy and peace and harmony are not in nor of person, but are the one conscious life or spirit in being and are therefore spiritual and unceasing. All things pertaining to and essential to our normal state of living, from a pin to a palace, when rightly viewed, are not matter, but are spiritual ideas at hand. Martha Wilcox.
Thank you.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.